this chapter again. Okay, so we'll make a start on chapter two. There is a solution. So again, this chapter is still part of step one, and it outlines the problem and the solution. And the first pages 17 to 23 focus on showing us our powerlessness over our alcoholic foods. So on page 17 starts with some hope. So thousands of men and women, and that will be millions now, millions of addicts who were once just as hopeless as Bill. Nearly all have recovered. They have solved the drink problem, the eating problem, whatever the substance is. And also on page 17, it talks about there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. And the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. So we can recover. That those three statements really give a message of hope. No matter how our disease manifests, someone will have your story. And the friends we meet in fellowship, the identification that we get. You know, I have some wonderful friends who aren't compulsive overeaters and aren't in OA, and they support me 100%, but they can't understand what it's like to be me as a compulsive overeater. But in this fellowship, people just get me and I get other people. It's just incredible. And then it talks a little bit more about the impact of the disease. And on page 18, it talks about it engulfs all whose lives touch the sufferers. You know, my disease affected my whole family and beyond. Such was my misery when I was in the food. You know, I was absolutely not the best Gail when I was in the food. And it talks about wives, parents, and intimate friends usually find us even more unapproachable than do the psychiatrist and the doctor. You know, I reacted really, really badly if anyone tried to talk to me about my weight. And yet, the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution. So, talking to another compulsive overeater is like balm to my soul. And this is the essence of why OA works. And the importance of identification is huge because, as I said earlier, I genuinely did not know anybody else did what I did with food until I came into OA. And then again, we are reminded about step 12. The book is just littered with reminders about the importance of working with others. On page 20, it talks about our very lives as ex-problem eaters depend upon our constant thought of others and how we may help meet their needs. And that is a condition of my continued recovery. It asks us a really pertinent question on page 20. It says that we've recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. So if you are a compulsive overeater who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? And as I said earlier, we can just stop trying to figure this out because it says it's the purpose of this book to answer such questions specifically. You know, really good questions that I had to search myself for. Do I want to stop? And I didn't always want to stop. Sometimes I just wanted the negative side effects to go away. You know, do I want to get over my compulsive overeating? Do I understand that I can't eat certain foods because of my body and I can't quit eating these foods because of my mind? That's my powerlessness. And if so, if I want to stop, if I'm willing to take action, then I can stop trying to figure this out because I'm going to be given a set of instructions. And I love all the OA literature and AA literature. I listen to podcasts. I'm just like a sponge. I can't get enough of recovery literature, podcasts, etc. But my experience, and it's only my experience, is the only place that I find the instructions for recovery is in this book. And that's why I feel so passionate about sharing about this book, because by being taken through this book, that's how I recovered. And then on page 20, it talks about halfway down the page how many times people have said to us, I can take it or leave it alone. Why can't he? You know, why don't you eat like a lady or quit? You know, why don't you try this instead of that? And I cannot tell you how many times people had that conversation with me. But everybody who was having that conversation and asking me those questions wasn't a compulsive overeater. They thought they were an expert on how to treat my compulsive overeating, but they didn't understand my disease. And I was asked the equivalent of all of those questions. Can't you just eat less, exercise more, stop for your children, just eat one piece of something occasionally? And the reason for that is that people only saw what the food was doing to me, i.e., making me very morbidly obese. But all I could do was see what food was going to do for me. And the consequences weren't enough to stop. So everybody else saw the effect of the food on my body. And all I could think about was what food was going to do for me. It was going to make me feel better. It was going to help me zone out. And I didn't only eat when I felt rubbish, or I didn't like how I was feeling. I also used food to intensify feelings of joy as well. And then it describes the three type of drinkers. So we relate that to the three type of eaters. So it talks about moderate drinkers. So if somebody's only a moderate eater, and I've got friends who are like this, they can take or leave food. You know, they occasionally overindulge, but when the food's gone, they're okay. Then it describes the hard drinker. And again, I would relate that to a hard compulsive overeater who can stop or moderate for a good reason. So they start to get health concerns. A doctor says, you know, your blood sugar's rising, you need to stop eating sugar. And they can do that. And, you know, we have all three types of compulsive overeaters in the fellowship, I believe. And if I'm one of those two types, I might be able to get and stay abstinent by putting the food down and going to meetings. But if I am a real compulsive overeater, and what defines me as a real compulsive overeater, I begin to lose all control once I eat certain foods. I eat against my will. I have no choice. That's what makes me a real compulsive overeater. No matter what the consequences are, I cannot stop. And that's why it's really important for me not to compare myself with anybody else, because I have to know what is my truth and what does my experience tell me. I don't compare my plan of eating to other people, because what other people can eat might kill me, and what I can eat might kill them. It's absolutely about knowing my truth and what my experience tells me. What does my step one experience tell me? Do I believe I am a real compulsive overeater? Maybe you aren't. Maybe you are. I don't know. And I can't tell a sponsee whether he or she is a real compulsive overeater or not. I can only do that for myself. But do I get the identification in this book that I am a real compulsive overeater? And then there's a really good question halfway down page 22 that says, if hundreds of experiences have shown that one compulsive bite means another binge with all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why is it that I take that one bite? And that is my insanity. I really struggled with that word in step two, because I thought, well, I'm not insane, because, you know, lots of areas of my life are good. You know, I've got a lovely house, great friends. But that's my insanity. Knowing that I cannot stop eating certain foods and I can't stop myself from starting eating them, that is the insanity that's talked about in step two. And it says on page 22 that once he takes any alcohol, whatever, into his system, so once I eat certain foods, something happens to my body and my mind which makes it virtually impossible for me to stop. Gail's experience abundantly confirms that. That was my step one experience, 100%. The craving decides when I am done. So, a really good question. Do I accept that I react differently to certain foods or food behaviors? Does my experience abundantly confirm this? And then page 23 to 43 starts to describe what it's like to be sober, abstinent, and not having a choice as to whether I compulsively overeat or not due to the obsession of the mind. So, quite rightly, on page 23, it points out that these observations would be academic and pointless if Gail never took that first bite, thereby setting the terrible cycle in motion. Therefore, Gail's main problem centers in her mind rather than her body. And that is where my thought started. The binge started up here, because the thought would just float into my head. I could be having a really good day, and the thought would just float into my head. And then on page 24, it says at the top of the page, at a certain point in the drinking of every alcoholic, so at a certain point in Gail's eating career, she passed into a state where the most powerful desire to stop binging is of absolutely no avail. And if you remember, in the doctor's opinion, it talked about eating to overcome a craving beyond our mental control. So I am completely screwed, because that is exactly my experience. And that is why I need a power greater than me. If I don't have that power, my mind is the power, and my mind is always going to take me to the food. And food is more powerful than me. My desire is no match for the food. And my desire to stop compulsively overeating, as we know in tradition three, is what gets me a seat around the OA table. But recovery is going to take a lot more than sitting around the table. And again, on page 24, it says that the fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscure, have lost the power of choice in drink. So again, that is my experience. You know, I have lost the power of choice when it comes to certain foods. My so-called willpower becomes practically non-existent, and I'm unable at certain times to bring into my consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. I am without defense against that first bite. And that's completely different to the medical allergy I have to kiwi fruit, because I am absolutely able to bring to the forefront of my mind what happens to me when I eat kiwi fruit. And it's so horrendous, I don't even have it in the house. And every time I go to a restaurant and they say, have you got any allergies? I said, yes, kiwi fruit. But I'm not able to do that when it comes to my binge foods. And that's such a powerful point for me, that is how my compulsive overeating manifests itself. My own mind will not protect me, and I never know when that certain point is going to be, even in recovery. And this is why keeping spiritually fit is so important. And you know, I can still today have thoughts that it's going to be different, but if I'm connected to my higher power, as it talks about in the promises, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. And, you know, it when that urge to binge came, it almost felt like I'd got this magnetic draw, like I'd been hypnotized, and have no choice, no power, no memory. And the danger of this disease is that I start to feel better and I forget the horror of being in the disease. You know, if I've not binged for 6 months and I've started to lose some weight, I start to feel much better. And it's a dim and distant memory about that binging. And yet my disease is getting worse all the time in the background. And again, the consequences don't come to my mind, because I can only think what food will do for me, and my mental defenses won't protect me. So like not touching a hot stove again if I've burnt my hand. And that is why this disease is so cunning, powerful and baffling. And I listened to a great speaker, and he says the miracle of this program is that we recover. The danger of this program is that we recover, because I can certainly forget that I'm a compulsive overeater because I'm a healthy body weight. I've not been in the food for a very long time. I'm living my best life. I'm really fit. I'm doing this, that, and the other. I can forget that I am a compulsive overeater. And then again on page 24, a really powerful reminder with our thinking, you know, that we can't bring those thoughts to mind. And then I'm going to be all right this time. It's going to be different. I'll start again tomorrow. All of those things that you described when you shared back in your experience, when that sort of thinking is fully established in an individual with compulsive overeating tendencies, they have probably placed themselves beyond human aid. And if I truly recognize that where I am, then that, and I accept that, then the debate ceases. I don't need to debate it anymore. If I recognize that I am beyond human aid, then that is my step one experience, and I can move on to step two. And I heard somebody talk about a GPS as a God positioning system. I loved that. So I know the destination and the address, steps 11 and 12, that's where I want to be. And steps 1 to 9 are going to get me there. They are my instructions for the journey. So again, a really good question, you know, do I believe that I am beyond human aid, or do I still think that I can do this myself? And I often think, and I have this conversation with sponsees, you know, we have to be pretty desperate to work the steps. You know, I really didn't want to do a lot of stuff that I was asked to do. You know, I certainly didn't want to do a step four. And then when I'd done a step four, I thought I'd done really well getting it all written down on paper, and then having to share it with somebody in step five, then having to go and make amends for what I'd done. You know, this is tough stuff. But it's that desperation that I read in these pages that drives me to take that action, because it's the only way that I am going to recover. So again, you know, these pages have been pretty grim, pretty hardcore, laying it on the line. And then at the top of 25, thank goodness, it says there is a solution. And when I get to this point with sponsees, we almost breathe a sigh of relief, because we've really kind of been in the darkness. But there is a solution. And it says we might not like it, but this is what I have to do. You know, I might not like what I have to do, and I may have to accept that I know absolutely nothing. But if I am a real compulsive overeater that's been described in these pages so far, then I am going to be doomed without a spiritual solution. This is what my step one experience tells me. And if I follow the instructions in the book, they're going to lead me to having a spiritual experience, and a miracle will happen. And I have two options. One is to continue in this disease, which will kill me. And the other is to accept spiritual help. Because what I know about myself today is that I either need a lot of food to live my life, or I need a lot of God and recovery to live my life. And do I see that I only have two options? So I think that's probably a good place to pause for a quick 10-minute comfort break. And it's just 22 before the hour. So if we can be back in 10 minutes, and we'll finish There Is a Solution, and then move into more about alcoholism. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Gail. Thank you.